हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavad Sandarbha Adhyayana 3, Adhikarana 3, Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan, page 62. The same form, Tad Rupena, was communicated in Bhagavatam. I meditate upon that pure, spotless Narayan, who is free from suffering and death, and who previously revealed this incomparable lamp of knowledge to Brahma. Brahma then spoke it to the sage Narada, who narrated it to Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. Srila Vyas revealed this Bhagavatam to the greatest of sages, Sukadev Goswami, and Sukadev mercifully spoke it to Parikit Maharaj Parikit, Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.19. The spiritual nature of the name is indicated in the prayers to Krishna in Devaki's womb. O Lord, your name and form, representing your qualities, birth, and activities, cannot be realized since you are the witness of all things. Can only be inferred by logic and scripture. The devotees realize you through devotional actions. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.36. Rudriti, Srila Prabhupada. The history of Krishna, the person, has been openly seen by everyone. Yet only those who are in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead can appreciate this history. Whereas non-devotees who have not developed their loving qualities think that the activities, form, and attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are fictitious. Therefore, this verse explains, Nanama rupe guna janma karma bhir nirupitavye tavatasya sakshinaha. In this connection, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given the example that persons suffering from jaundice cannot taste the sweetness of sugar candy. Although everyone knows that sugar candy is sweet. Similarly, because of the material disease, non-devotees cannot understand the transcendental name, form, attributes, and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although they actually see the Lord's activities, either through authority or through history. The Puranas are old, authentic histories, but non-devotees cannot understand them, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of Vedic knowledge. Non-devotees cannot understand even the preliminary study of transcendental knowledge, Bhagavad Gita. They simply speculate and present commentaries with absurd distortions. In conclusion, unless one elevates himself to the transcendental platform by practicing Bhakti Yoga, one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead or His name, form, attributes, or activities. But if by chance, by the association of devotees, one can actually understand the Lord and His features, one immediately becomes a liberated person, as the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4.9. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So this point of not being able to appreciate the Lord except through devotion, it's a very essential point, because we tend to like to use our, you know, we're brought up to use our logic in that, because if you don't have the Lord, then the only thing that's consistent that you see in the world is what you observe logically, and then think about it logically. That's the only thing that will give structure to your life. Otherwise, then it's just as you feel and whatever you're doing, like the animals. They're doing things, and then according to the situation, whatever they feel like, that's what they do. Right? There's no necessity, no basis of it other than eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and then the six enemies. Right? So there won't be anything other than these aspects. So for the human being, then they want to be able to, they tend to try to look at things and make some sense out of it. Right? Because the consciousness they have is consciousness that you could understand the Supreme Lord. Right? It's meant for that. So they're looking for something higher. They're looking for, you know, something to elevate themselves. And so the only thing that they find in that is logic. Right? They use their intelligence, they use the logic. So in that, based on pratyaksha, right, or this ascending process, they're going to apply their logic to things. And if it doesn't match with their logic, they will feel there's something wrong with it. Right? But because Krishna is beyond logic, right? He's beyond the material creation. Therefore, they won't be able to understand him. That's just the way it is. So, in anything that we're trying to appreciate from the Srimad Bhagavatam and from the devotional process, we have to understand that only through bhakti, if we're approaching it from that, can it be understood. If we approach it from any other method, it won't be understood. Right, so if we want to understand the culture of Krishna consciousness, the practice of Krishna consciousness, the tradition of Krishna consciousness, unless we approach it from the devotional aspect, it won't be understood. Right. Means devotees accept that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So that part is good, that part's solid. And that they're devotees and this and that. But when they get down to applying it into the religious activities, right? The activities to express and support devotional service. That's at that time that they may not apply the aspect of faith and devotion, but logic. And then if they do that, since devotional service is independent, they won't be able to understand it. Does that make sense? It's a very, very simple, straightforward thing. Right? Because we generally take the thing that I'm a devotee, so therefore everything I do is devotional. Right? No. If one is situated on, you know, the more advanced you are, the tendency is to be more devotional. You know, once you come to prema, it's exclusively devotional. But before that, there may be something else. That's why it's not prema. So to just take it that I'm a devotee, I do devotional service, yes. When you're in the temple, you'll see that the individual, it's a funny thing. The individuals that may be very strict on, or let's go from the other side, who may be very liberal in their view of dealing with the material world and not really, you know, worried about it, because that means they're not necessarily appreciative or supportive of the Vedic traditional methods. But when it comes in the temple program, they'll be very strict about, you know, you do like this and you do like that, and anything that they themselves have practiced and learned. Right? So they'll be quite strict on that. But because they're unable to take that and understand why they're doing that, then when they apply it across into the indirect activities, then we don't necessarily see that it follows the devotional path. Right? It's just they're just going to work because you have to. Right, it's not that they can see how the work connects to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that will come up. So with practice, with association, with contemplation, then one starts to see that directly and indirectly everything's connected to Krishna. So, yeah. The form of the Lord is non-material. It appears by the Swarup Shakti, which is self-manifesting. This was shown previously. So Krishna is not dependent upon anything else. He manifests himself by his own Shakti, his own Swarup. So he's not dependent on anything. Like us, we're dependent for this body to be manifest on the material energy. Right? And so many of the different forms, the modes of nature and all these different things to manifest the body. We're dependent. But Krishna is independent. Worship by sincere devotion, revealing his true spiritual form. The Lord spoke to Brahma the four essential verses of Bhagavatam in order to give knowledge about himself. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.4. Right? So to give the essence, the Chaturshloki, these are the main point. Everything is based on that. Everything is developed from that. Right? Everything's contained within this. So that way then you know how to judge. If you're trying to apply Krishna consciousness, then you have to go there, because it's just like we said, in all places, all times, in all circumstances, we have to see that it connects to Krishna. Right? To say, oh, it doesn't connect to Krishna, then that means you're not, that's, you're ignoring the fourth verse. Right? And he says, oh no, but you know, if people aren't satisfied, you know, if people aren't happy with what we do, they won't take up Krishna consciousness, then that means we're not understanding the third verse. And that underlying that is the second verse, is that we have a value, modern social values, above Krishna consciousness. Right? We value chanting in the temple program, but outside that, in the indirect, then we have our own material values. And we're not seeing those connected to Krishna, therefore illusion. And why? Because we don't see the first verse, that everything is Krishna. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Udriti. Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that only by bhakti yoga can one know Him perfectly. And then one can enter into the science of God. Brahmaji understood, because enter into the science of God, right? Because Prabhupada before described science meaning the practical application, right? Where you actually use it, you live it. So that's why you can, only by bhakti yoga, then you have the knowledge, you can understand it, then you can enter into the application. So if someone can't apply, but they think that they have great understanding, means they don't actually understand. Right? Because actual understanding means you go, I should apply this. Right? That's actually scientific. Right? If we just like to theorize or just be sentimental, that's not scientific. Right? Brahmaji undertook great penance in performing bhakti yoga, and thus he was able to see the transcendental form of the Lord. His transcendental form is 100% spiritual, and one can see him only by spiritualized vision after proper discharge of tapasya or penance in pure bhakti yoga. Right? So you're performing bhakti yoga, and so those activities that are done, you know, so penance and austerity, like that, tapasya or penance, that the tapasya that you're going through is you're performing the activity because you're supposed to do it, and you're tolerating whatever the difficulties that come up from doing it. But you're doing that as recommended in devotional service to please Krishna. Then Krishna will be appreciated. Krishna will reveal himself through that. It means Krishna is trading our little effort for his unlimited position. So it's not a bad trade. That's why it's said you can't do business with Krishna, because what he's offering it's outside of business. It's just like if I say, okay, let's have a business deal here. You give me one paisa, right? Do they even have one paisa coins anymore? No. Okay, what do you get? 10 paisa?
1 rupee.
1 rupee.
They don't have anything less than a rupee.
They do the tobaccos. They do accept 1 rupee small.
That is so funny. So they could go back to the old paisa then. Because you don't have you don't have it divided up, no? So then we can start going back to, you know, Akana and Baruana and all that kind of stuff, right? So, I say, okay, get 1 rupee, right? Okay? At least it goes today, okay? 1 rupee, and we'll give you, 100 crores. Would you say that's business? No. You say the other guy's crazy. So that's what Krishna's offering. He's offering unlimited for our effort of 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. So that's the whole point. That's why then we don't do business with Krishna, because it's beyond business here. Right? Yes.
Maharaj, so how is it possible that we believe in Krishna and simultaneously we don't trust Krishna?
Because we accept the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but not the religion of Krishna consciousness. Because it's two aspects. Because the philosophy will be the direct aspect, but the religion will be the indirect, the secondary. Right? So the philosophy will be describing the primary and how the secondary connects. So we'll accept generally the primary aspects of it. It's just that in the secondary, if we don't have an opinion, and that will accept those. Right? But if it's something we already have an opinion on, then we're going to judge the philosophy and the religion according to our understanding of religion. You know, it's just like, let us say, the smartas. They'll have a problem with the background of a Western devotee. Right? Their birth is not appropriate according to them. So that's their attachment. It may be based a misunderstanding of Shastra, but it's based on the concept of duties and those kind of things, right? Whether how much they're practicing it or things or not, it's another thing. But then, coming from the West, then we'll make it based on the pranamoya acceptance within the context of our particular, you know, upbringing. The particular region, our particular parents, and the association that's there. And then, of course, there's always what's left over from last lifetime. And then, if we start to judge Krishna consciousness from that, that's where the problem comes up. So, as we said, because we're a devotee, we do devotional things, therefore, then, whatever I'm thinking, it's devotional. And so then it'll actually be a point of discussion on whether, you know, we follow things that Prabhupada said, or the scriptures say, or things like that. And it's being thought that they're being very, you know, they're being, you know, manisha. They're being thoughtful here. When actually, not really. Thoughtful means you cleared the doubts. You know, manana comes because of a shravana. And you've cleared the doubts. So the doubts aren't clear. So without any clear doubts, then trying to work in areas that you have doubts in, then one shouldn't do that. Because it means one should hear in that and associate with those who can clear the doubt, but to think that the doubt itself has a particular standing and authority, then that's misunderstanding. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that if we're not careful, then the weeds come up. And the weeds are only going to be from our conditioning. They're not going to be from someone else's. Does that make sense? So, the aspect of accepting religion, that's why we have. We're Vaishnava by philosophy, and then we follow Varnashram by religion. You know, or what's recommended in the Vedas. Right? So, all the different religious processes that are given, you know, that Prahlad Maharaj mentions and others mention, that these are the religious processes we use. So, we're Vedic by religion, and we're Vaishnava by philosophy. Does that make sense? So, you can say, if you're working with the Hindus, we're Hindu by religion. Because we are. Hindu simply means those who follow the Vedas. And so, in that way, we are Hindu by religion, not by philosophy. Because they're kind of, you know, it's all a mushmash that it all goes together and whatever you're into, it's cool. No, we're specific. It's Vaishnava. You know, just like you'll have those who are Hindu that are Shaivites, those are Shaktas, those are, you know, so all these different things. And so culturally they're all same. Right? There'll be some, because of their goals and that, there'll be some little details in which religious processes they'll accept and how. But basically you're working within the same framework. There's something to discuss because there's a common point. Right? But as soon as you drop out of that for devotees, then that's the common point, because that's what everybody has in common, is the Vedic culture. But if you drop below that into our own conditioning, our background, what's common? It's just not common at all. It means people don't even get along with their neighbors, and they're living in the same area. So then how would devotees from different regions and different countries, you know, different backgrounds, different varnas, and how would they get along? There's no way. It means there's talk about it, but the point is we talk about community, and community will mean if we use brotherhood or stuff like that, that'll work, right? Or at least personhood, you know, maybe if you want to be a little more careful, you know, like that. Unless somebody's identifying as a cabbage or something, you know, how do you say? We're a cis female cabbage. Yeah. Okay. That's how we roll, right? Because cabbages can roll, you know. Yeah. So the whole difficulty comes down is that people are brothers or family. We talk about family. We're all one family, but where's the origin of that family? You're a family because of the father, mother, grandfather, somebody up there. So if you don't accept the Krishna, then you can't have community. That's the problem in the modern thing, is they're trying to create community, but they're not accepting the common father. And because of that, they can't actually create community. You know, Prabhupada pointed out about the UN. They're there talking, and you know, from when they started the UN to now, there's more countries. Every so many years, there's more countries. So that means there's less, you know, unity. So, yeah. Yes.
If devotee tries to remember Krishna by doing intellectual effort,
yes.
But because of disease or something else, before death he will lose his ability to be concentrated on Krishna, or he will lose his consciousness. Where is this devotee will go, and will it this weakness in focus on Krishna and weak memory will influence on his relationship with Krishna?
But the point is association. So you keep good association. By that association, then you always keep yourself in a good position. Does that make sense? So by keeping good association, by reading, by chanting, by doing all these devotional processes, then you keep yourself nicely situated. Right? Because you have hearing and chanting is first, then remembering comes because of that. So if there's a problem in remembering, you just go, you know, you put more emphasis on hearing and chanting. So there's never any loss. That's the nice thing about devotional service.
If devotee will die unconsciousness,
You can't say that we say they're unconscious, but I kind of have a doubt they're unconscious. You know what I'm saying? When you leave the body, you're probably quite aware of it. Does that make sense? We may not be able to perceive it, but it's... Because the whole thing is about your consciousness at the time of death, so then... You know, so why wouldn't you be conscious? Plus, you have the aspect that Krishna is going to arrange something. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
When Prabhupada said once, people become unconscious because they are very conscious. They don't want to leave the body, so they have to become unconscious before they die.
Okay. Oh, okay, so they have to be unconscious to leave, otherwise they won't leave. Okay. But that still, that would mean that they're attached to the body.
Yeah. Basically, everybody's conscious and they're dying.
Yeah. Okay.
There are two verses in Bhagavad Gita describing these opinions that you are talking before. Everybody has opinion.
Yeah.
One is, Krishna says that opinions are actually part of the field. They are not us. They are not the soul proper. And then the next
part. Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. A little later he says that following different conceptions of life, the soul goes to different bodies because he follows his own conceptions.
Okay, nice. Yeah, so then if the opinions are part of the field, that means that they're already set. We're thinking it's our own individual opinions, but they're already a set standard issue opinions like that. Because otherwise, how do you get, you know, people have opinions, and it only becomes, let's say there's five people, right? And something comes up, right? They'll make an opinion, right? And then someone else has a different opinion. So now generally, the other three will agree with one or the other. You know?
Yes.
But now, what if you have five totally different opinions? Will there be a discussion? No, the discussion will stop. If you can make it into two, you know, into duality, and then you can argue over it, create all kinds of things and this. But if you have five completely separate opinions, there's no basis of discussion. It just, you know, they'll just, somebody's going to say whatever and then, you know, go on.
It's too confusing.
Yeah, it's just too confusing. So the whole point is these are standard things that are given, right? Because you have senses, there has to be things for the senses to deal with. So you have the intelligence and the mind, therefore you have to have things to get, how you say, inspired about, and you have to have things to think about. So these opinions are just regular things. We think, it's this philosophy, that philosophy from this person or that psychologist or that. These are standard issue stuff. Every Kali Yuga, they come up. You know what I'm saying? This time it's, what do you call it? Nietzsche. next time it'll be Upade, something like that. It'd just be some other guy or, Does that make sense? Dandike, Padike. Be something. So the whole point is it's just going to be some, it just comes up by the modes. We're thinking, no, it's my opinion. No, it's just the modes of nature. It's just the field of activity. It's not the soul has this opinion. The soul may identify it, which is like the body. The soul is not the body, but we identify with it. The soul is also not these material opinions, but we may identify with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess this is why it's so difficult to understand that Krishna is Advayam Gyan, and then we're talking Panchatattva, with the five truths.
Yes, but that five is one. that's the important thing, is whatever knowledge is there is connected to Krishna. So that's the difficulty that comes up, is science, that's one thing, and religion is another. No, they're all part of one truth. And so then if you understand that, then it's there. One's coming from authority and the other one's coming from perception, but it's still describing the same thing. So there's only one truth. But that truth is not impersonal. That truth is personal. Therefore, there's unlimited qualities and attributes and potencies and these interactions and results and all these things. But it's still one truth. All this is contained within one. Just like we say, your house. Okay? But now the house has so many aspects to it. But it's just one house. So you can look at the living room side or the kitchen or the bedroom or the bathroom or, the outside, the foyer or different places like that. You can look at all those things. Or, how it's constructed, what it's made out of, where it's situated. So many discussions can happen about one thing. So Krishna being everything, you can have unlimited conversations about him, but you're only discussing one. But so that you can start a conversation, then these major areas are given. Because they have different flavors. So there's a difference between Vishnu Tattva as the original, Vishnu Tattva as the expansion, and Vishnu Tattva as the incarnation in mood. That's why you give. Even though there's that one original person, but then you have the expansions, then you can have so many, and then you have the incarnation, so many. But they'll all be in a basic mood. Does that make sense? And because he's Satchidananda, then you're going to have these three aspects. Right? And so in the Panchatattva, you don't have to represent the external energy, even though it's part of the three. Does that make sense? Because when you deal with the internal potency, it's just the shadow of that is the external. So that's why generally you always have this categories of three, and then from there then it expands how you put it together. So yes.
All these conceptions of life are like philosophies which can be handled by the six systems of philosophy.
They all are made of all philosophies, means all philosophy you can say is there in the six, all the elements of philosophy. But how you put it together, that's something else. Just like in the contemporary environment, it's very big fusion cooking. Does that make sense? Never heard of fusion cooking. Huh. Okay. Anyone else hasn't heard of fusion cooking? You haven't heard? Huh. Okay. Fusion cooking means you're mixing cuisines. Mm. It's just like, you have Chinese noodles, right? Chow mein. right? And then a guy in Calcutta cooks it. That's fusion, because it's all Indian spices and everything like that. You look at it as Chinese, because if you bring that out, they go, oh, Chinese, but it tastes Indian. That's fusion. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like, what do you call it? Paneer tikka pizza. That's fusion.
That's in the Mahaprasadam.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying that fusion. You just take something from this and that, and you know, it's like, you know, the Mexicans, you know, they make the beans, put it in a chapati in a wrap like that. But let's say you cook a nice French sabji, but you put it in a wrap and like that, just because it's easier to eat. That's fusion. You understand? So these six systems, they have all the elements that are there in philosophy, but people, and so you have the six schools, and they will very nicely, very clearly give all the different main flavors that you can have. But you'll see is that people will take this and that and put it together and come up with stuff. So you study the six philosophies so you know what they are. Just like Buddhi Yoga means it has karma, jnana, and bhakti, you know, all together. But which one's prominent at which time, that's another thing. But you study them individually. So you study the six schools individually so you know all the elements. But when you apply it, it's going to be mixed. Does that make sense? You know, like this, we're talking about people and community, but they're actually impersonalists. Right? You know, stuff like that. They're impersonalists because it's just, they're talking just people. They're not about individuals. You know what I'm saying? If you're talking about a very liberal kind of thing, see, pranamoy means you have to give sacrifice for greater good. Right? So, it means everybody has to sacrifice some of their own independence to work in the community. Right? But, you can, as you get more and more liberal, it becomes more and more towards the left, then no one has any individual rights anymore. Even though they're talking about everybody being an individual and that. So it sounds like they'll have the maximum rights, but they don't. You know what I'm saying? So the closer you are to the middle, that's where rights are. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that everything becomes mixed. Right, and then let's say you go right, they talk about the individual, but if it goes too far right, the rules governing that or the tradition is so much that there's no individuality. So again it goes. But that's because of tradition. The other one is because of some philosophy. You understand? So that's the, it's just a matter of you accept authority or not. And then the other aspect of what you're saying is, because of this lack of respect of authority, then people can't accept traditions and other things. If it doesn't make sense to them as an individual, they tend to not accept it. Because of lack of respect of authority. Is that something? You know, and that's pretty common. Because you see that the more conservative, it's about authority. You know, what that authority is another thing, whether it's God or it's community or whatever it is, but, you know, the tradition, but it's still about authority. But when you get into the liberal, into the left, it's not about tradition or authority. It's about what you feel. Because they make it that it's about the individual. But at the same time, it gets where you have to feel. Yes, it's about what you feel, but you have to feel like this. You know, as it goes more and more left. So that's the thing, is that as you go right and left, they become basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right. So many sense.
Nowadays, that the more victim you are, the more authority you have, actually. Your opinion matters more.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the whole thing. It's just how to control and enjoy. That's the basic principle. It has to be understood is that you can't function. If you're dealing with material consciousness, you can't function outside of that. Because that's what material consciousness is. I'm the controller and enjoyer. So all these are different ways to try to control and enjoy. And as Prabhu is pointing out from the Gita, that it's just the field of activities. So depending upon which modes that you are appreciate, then you'll move in that field. And that field already has all its facilities. It already has all its philosophies. Is that... Yeah. It's not that it's any different. Yes.
So if we take six schools, it seems that the first two is the scientists. They base their opinion on that. And then psychology is the next tool.
You could, psychology, but you also have that element of the science of the Shankhya. So the Shankhya will be that connection between them.
Between.
You know, it's just like, is that when you're dealing with something, you, let's say as a general rule is that you have a progression.
Yeah.
Okay? So, you take each of that position in the progression, divide it by three.
Yes.
So the middle one you could say is basically pretty much it's that defines the position. But as you go, as you know, the forward will be like the next one, and the back will be like the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So therefore, you'll have Gotama will be a position, right?
Yes.
You know, of that logic. Then Vaisheshika will be taking that and going more into that kind of scientific aspect.
Right.
But it still be based on logic.
Yes.
Right? And then Shankhya, it'll have that touch of that having that science, and that, but it also has the concept that it's dealing with the subtle body, so it will accept, so it'll have that elements that are similar like yoga. Right? And yoga will have that scientific aspect, but because it's yoga and you're doing something, getting it, then it'll have that aspect of karma. You know what I'm saying? So they'll all have these things that they're next to each other, so they have, but they do go in these two groups. You can say the first two, the next two, and the last two. They have in general groups of similarity, but the ones that are, that wherever they connect, those are where they're similar.
And the last two, they will represent whom?
That'll be, you could say is that it's based fully on the Veda. The other four, the first four, then it's going to have the aspect that it's not necessarily accepting, it's based, they're all based on the Veda, but they only accept those verses that support their philosophy. Right, so this, you can say like this pranamoyic thing is that they have their own concept of morality. So then Krishna conscious philosophy and culture, if it supports their concept of morality, it's okay, and if it doesn't, it's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, let's say the same person who is discussing about some modern issue, And how they're not really accepting Varnashram in this case, and there, you know, has to be more equality or this or that. And so they're doubting it, but at the same time, let's say the Brahmachari does something wrong, they'll be the most strict.
Right.
They'll be the least liberal, though they'll identify themselves as liberal. They'll be the least accommodating. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so, but it'll be because of their feeling. You also have somebody who's very, you know, that means someone farther left will be like that. So someone farther right, also, if they're too far right, it'll be because the rule is like that. That's why it's not accepted. But you'll see they themselves follow the rules. It's that they're following the rules, and someone who doesn't follow the rules, they don't like that. The other one, they don't follow rules, but they don't mind imposing rules on other people if it matches their position. So it gives authority to their position. You understand? So that's the fun part is that Krishna's pointing out, we're thinking we're independent in coming up with all this when it's just standard modes. Just how they'll go. You think in a particular way, you'll go into that line. So depending upon your values, then you'll have your philosophy. But the bottom line is controller and enjoyer. So that's why then the essential point in Krishna consciousness is giving up the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer. And accepting that I am the servant of Krishna. That's essential. Because as long as then we want to maintain our own position. So even in a settler position, that one that, you know, last year we were discussing about Are we fixed in a particular rasa, or can we change rasa? It's still about control and enjoy. I want to be in control of which rasa I have. Why? Because I want to see which one will give me more enjoyment. So it's not actually based on devotion. But because you're talking rasa and things like that, it sounds like devotional service, but it's not actually. Because we are who we are. So then we come to that. We purify ourselves. We are who we are. It's like the gold ring falls in the mud. Then we're telling the gold ring, you have to wash yourself to come back to your, natural gold position. But do I have to be gold? Can I be platinum? Could I be, do I have to be yellow gold? Could I be rose gold? So that means that as I wash off the ring, it changes? No, it's the same ring. So we already have our natural relationship with Krishna, that inherent relationship, that's unique. And because it is us, we will be satisfied in that because it's us. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we see is this principle of control and enjoy, it tends to permeate everything. If we're not careful. That's why it said when you chant, the weeds come up. So you have to be careful to look for these weeds. You have to be able to tell the difference between a weed and that. If it's just a matter of you're just a greenie, then, it's growing, it's green. What's the problem? It's natural. Like that. And I do organic chanting, so then all the weeds are even organic and all that. So what's the big deal? Does that make sense?
In Chaitanya Charitamrita class, you explained that if we join to Lord Chaitanya movement, we will feel more enjoyment because Srimati Radharani can share with us, because we show special one. And if we inspire by this point, does it mean that we position of enjoyer?
No. The point is you have to make a distinction. Krishna is enjoyer. That's his inherent nature. The soul is part and parcel of Krishna. So, therefore, the soul also has the same qualities. The problem is are you enjoying in the context of serving with Krishna, in context of Krishna, or it's a matter of it separate? Right, because the other thing is, well, what am I going to get from it? Rather than how is Krishna being pleased by it? Point is the soul being happy, that's inherent in the soul. Does that make sense? So that's going to be there. That's why all living entities technically are looking for Krishna. But they don't know what they're looking for or where to look. They just know something is there. And so then in that way they're going. They're following Krishna's vibhutis, right? His opulences. And then just going for that. But they don't get back to the origin unless you know. It's only by devotee's grace, then you know what you're looking for is coming from Krishna. So the opulence that you catch that, but then you're looking at it from the external form. That's why you're not satisfied, right? Like that. And then even you can take it up to the metaphysical, that'll have more of an appreciation, you'll have more of a detachment, but still, it's what's the origin of that metaphysics? Right? So that's the thing, is the gross and subtle, they still have an origin. Does that make sense? Yes.
In trying to develop this control and enjoy mentality and cultivating being servant, the non-Vedic environment again and again, we get contaminated by that.
That's because yes, by association. That's why you're always careful about your association, like that. But at the same time, it's not that it has to bother you. Let's say for instance, there might be a difference in. Let us say you have Western devotees in India, okay? And you have Indian devotees in India, okay? Now, you can have the situation, let's say, like we're in one of the big cities, that the Indian devotees in the big city might be a little bit more distracted by the Western stuff, right? Because of that inclination. But the Western devotees have left that and come to India because they're not so much interested in it. Does that make sense? Anyway. So, you'll have that aspect. So it's just a matter of what your value is. Or you have those who don't get so much involved in that, so then they don't get affected. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Or, let's say, you have the other, is that you have, let's say, an Indian devotee in the West. Right? Let's say they're from there or something, they went to school there. Somehow or another, they were connected there before they took up devotional service. Or they're born there, or something like that. So, they may see more easily how the Vedic culture applies in the West than the Western devotee will. You know, just because their family does it and all that, you know. The grandmother can't even speak English. She speaks Hindi. Right? You know, so they do this stuff. They still eat Indian cooking and do all these other things, and the puja goes on, and, you know, they have Diwali, and, you know, it all happens. So others are saying, oh, you can't do this stuff in the West, and they're doing it. You know, half of Silicon Valley, if maybe more, is doing it. You know, that they're following some aspect of the Vedic culture. You know, that's why they're there. That makes sense? Because they still have some brains. That makes sense? So, the whole point is that you have to just analyze what's the benefit of it, what is of use. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. The form of the Lord manifest before Brahma is not one of the forms of which we have experience in the material world. Brahmaji did not perform such severe penances, types of penance, just to see a form of material production. Therefore, the question by Maharaj Parikit about the form of the Lord is answered. The form of the Lord is Satchidananda, Brahma Samhita 1, or eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But the material form of the living being is neither eternal nor but the material form of the living being is neither eternal nor full of knowledge nor blissful. That is the distinction between the form of the Lord and that of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, however, can regain this form of eternal knowledge and bliss simply by seeing the Lord by means of bhakti yoga. So, just as if you're appreciating the Lord and his position of Satchidananda, then the devotee can regain his position of Satchidananda. Right? But if one's not interested in the Lord who's Satchidananda, one won't be able to appreciate that. So that's why the non-devotees can't appreciate the Lord. The summary is that due to ignorance, the conditioned soul is encaged in the temporary varieties of material forms. But the Supreme Lord has no such temporary form like the conditioned souls. He is always possessed of an eternal form of knowledge and bliss. And that is the difference between the Lord and the living entity. One can understand this difference by the process of bhakti yoga. Right? So you can understand the Lord, you can understand the living entity, what is the common point, what is the difference, all that can be understood by the process of bhakti yoga. Otherwise, it's always going to be wrong. Krishna is not God, we're God. Right? That's the impersonalist. That's it. That, you know, God is everything. Okay, so then God is also God. No, God's not God. He's material, but we're God. Right? God is everywhere. Everything is Brahman. Okay, so that means the deity in the temple should be Brahman. No, that's material. We don't go in the temple. Right? Because they're just too envious. They don't want to see who's actually God. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's it. The commentary says, since it was described in the previous chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.8.8, that the Lord also has a form, how can bhakti directed to that form produce liberation? Okay. This verse answers, for the purpose giving knowledge of the tattva about jiva, Atmana, the Lord spoke to Brahma about worship through meditation. He showed his eternal form filled with knowledge, Ritvam, because he has been served by austerity, Avyalika Vrata Dirita. The meaning is this: by ignorance the jiva produces a false relationship with the body. The Lord simply manifests his body of knowledge by yoga maya. There is a great difference. Thus, by worshipping that form, one can attain liberation, right? The Lord manifests himself through the internal potency. We have a material body because of the external potency. We worship the Lord in his transcendental position. We will also then develop in that way. That's the position. Oh, interesting thing. Remember we had that discussion a few days ago about Brahma Samhita? About its authority? Then the devotees, they were just in south. They were at that temple. Yeah, where it was found. The pujaris are telling our devotees about how Lord Chaitanya came here and he found Brahma Samhita. So it wasn't that we made it up. So the Gaudiyas accept it. The Shris say it was found there. Whether they want to read it or not, that's another thing.
They showed us the spot where it happened.
Yeah, the spot, okay. Yeah, you even have the spot. So like that, doubters will, how you say, I think the modern context is haters will hate, right? It's just the way it is. You can't do anything about it. You can't convince someone who doesn't want to be convinced. You can't wake up someone who's pretending to be asleep. Right? So, like that. There's a good chance the scholars will have less of a problem with it than a devotee who leaves Krishna consciousness and now becomes a scholar. Does that make sense? And it's just like someone who's, you know, practicing with us leaves and goes to the Gaudiya Math. An ISKCON member will have a better relation with the Gaudiya Math directly than with that devotee who's now Gaudiya Math. It's just the way it works. You know, Manu says, there's no worse enemy than someone who was a friend who's now become an enemy. They're the worst enemy. Because they'll never respect anything you do. And they know everything. You know, they know so much, they know where to annoy you. But there's no better friend than someone who was an enemy who's now become a friend. Because he didn't like you, and now he's come to the point where he likes you. So there's nothing you can do that'll upset them. Does that make sense? So the first one, there's nothing that you do that won't upset them. And the second one is nothing you can do that will upset them. So that makes for the best and worst. Is that?
Mm-hmm. That's why mind becomes our best friend. It is currently the enemy.
Okay, it becomes best friend. Yes, yes. Not just an okay friend. But, yeah. The form was established as spiritual by Vyasadeva in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.20. My Lord, your form is transcendental to the three material modes. Yet, for the maintenance of the three worlds, you assume the white color of Vishnu in goodness. For creation, which is surrounded by the quality of passion, you appear reddish. And at the end, when there is a need for annihilation, which is surrounded by ignorance, you appear blackish. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.20. The meaning is this. When you, Tvam, the agent of creation, maintenance and destruction of the material world, Saha, desire to dwell in this world, Triloka, Sthitaye, using Maya Shakti, which takes shelter of you, Sva, you protect the Brahmanas, Shukla Varam, dedicated to Dharma, created by you, Atmanaha. This Maya is in material sattva, since it is inferior to the Lord and suitable to Brahmins. When you desire to create, using your Maya and Rajas, you protect the various Varnas, including Brahmanas, who have material desires, Rakta Varnam. When you desire to destroy the population, using Maya and Tamas, you protect those engaged in sin, Krishnam Varnam. Right, so here he's taking is that by the modes, then he's taking these positions and the potencies that are there, and in this way he protects those groups. Right? In other words, the person's in the mode of ignorance, he protects them that they stay in the mode of ignorance. You know, they get what they want. Things are destroyed. They feel bad. They lament. They, you know, the upset, the person, passion, they can go after their, they're inspired. They go after their desires. People in goodness, then they try to, elevate their position and have a better position and everything. Samishan. So he protects them through that. And in this way also then, so it's not just, it's the particular color of the avatar itself, it's that particular color. You know, that color because how it deals with those that are being protected. Does that make sense? No?
Yes.
So it has both those aspects.
And then we have Krishna Varna Trisha Krishna, which is in Bhagavatam about Lord Chaitanya.
Yes, yes.
He's Krishna himself, but he has a different color.
Yes, he has a different color. And it's also because Kali Yuga generally, they're blackish in color.
Right.
So he's not blackish, he's golden. So that's also an aspect. So that's the thing, is any of these, there would be the major aspect, but all these other aspects are also there. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, one week ago I told that one devotee in Russia wrote a book against ISKCON, and when I tried to find some points against his book, I found that Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned in Padma Purana and Skanda Purana that in these Puranas was written about tradition of Srimati Radharani and Goloka Vrindavana. But when I read these Puranas, I didn't find it. Does it mean that this church was lost?
It could be, but it also could be is you have to know who they're talking about. See, is that I remember once we were discussing about the Guru Puja for gurus other than Srila Prabhupada. And so then one devotee asked me about where is this authorized? And I explained to when you do the puja, that in the puja, then you're going to, first you have to worship the spiritual master, you have the aspect of the Guru Punkti Namaskar, where you're offering respect for the position and all that. Then you have actually the Guru Puja, where you offer the 16 items and all that. So someone who's doing puja in the deity room, and that then they will do that. But for those who they're taking part in the deity worship by watching the worship in the way of the artiks and things like that, and darshan and all that, then they don't have that as part of as the sadhana, right? So therefore then Srila Prabhupada established the Guru Puja, right? And so, like that, it makes sense if you know Pancharatrik deity worship and understand rituals and that, then that's obvious it's there. But they wanted a verse that says no on, you know, in the morning at 7, you know, 15, you know, 15 minutes before the darshan artik, then you should worship your guru who's, you know, not Srila Prabhupada, but is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada or Allah. And if the verse didn't say that, they wouldn't accept it. So that's the difficulty, is that their knowledge of the scriptures, their knowledge of the vocabulary, their knowledge of the culture, their knowledge of the, you could say, the poetics and all this is very, very limited. And so then, using this kind of scholarly approach, they'll argue over these things. And you can't convince them because they don't actually know the subject very well. You know, it's just like I remember seeing coming up twice where devotee Sanskrit scholars would take objection to the point in the Bhagavatam where it said that Tvasta was doing the yajna and he pronounced the shloka wrong, the syllable wrong. And so because of that, he got, instead of getting someone who was the enemy of Indra, he got someone who Indra was his enemy. And they're quoting all their grammar, you know, their, how you say, university level grammar, which in India that's about a third grader's grammar, literally. I'm not joking here. Like that. They're quoting that and saying how, no, it's this and that, and how can you say that? They're just going this whole thing. But what they're not understanding is that grammar that Prabhupada's talking about, that Prabhupada knows, is so far beyond their grammar. Because they're looking at the classical Sanskrit text, and they're applying classical Sanskrit grammar, but that yajna that Tvashta performs is in the Atharva Veda, so it's Vedic grammar. They have no idea of Vedic grammar. I mean, like zero, you know, if not less. But, you know, we're just trying to be nice here, you know, be gracious that they know zero. Right? And so then, they have the audacity to argue about the what the Acharya and the Acharyas before that, their commentaries, because they know a little Sanskrit. That's what my mother used to say, a little knowledge is dangerous. Because it's only a little. So that's the difficulty, is that they can't understand this, because in the Vedic Sanskrit, the Atharvaveda, then it has the same grammar in that of Rig Veda. So Rig Veda has this mark, I think it's called Pratyaya or something, that it's the mark is above a short vowel. And it's above a short vowel that's in the middle note. But because of that mark, then that note is then takes on the quality of the higher note, and it's longer. So he either put that in or didn't chant that. And because of that, so that's a grammatical thing that they would not even know exist, let alone have the position and authority to talk on. And they're willing to argue with the Acharyas over it. Like that. You know, we've seen, you know, this happened before. So it's just, that's the problem. They learn a little bit of knowledge, and now they take their secondary knowledge, the aparavidya, and then use it for avidya, rather than use it for support of paravidya. So it's a very standard thing. That's why it's being pointed out. Through your intelligence, you can't understand, because someone who identifies as intelligent, they'll think it's because of my intelligence, that's why I'm advanced. When it has zero to do with that. I mean, nothing. So that's why this has to be gone over again and again. Because this text here, the Sandarbha, then who's going to be studying it? Someone who tends to be more intellectual, or just your average Joe? You know, or Jane, or whatever they want to be called, right? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is it's going to be, so you have to make this point so strong, because they're the ones that are going to make the mistake. Does that make sense? So the Vedic literature only gives restrictions and directions to a particular individual, because that is their weakness. You know, it's just like, let's say somebody can't walk. Are you going to tell them, you know, no running down the stairs, you know? You know? Yeah, don't run with that knife in your hand. You know, do we have to tell them that? No. So you have to tell it to someone who can run and who has a tendency to run around without thinking. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. So any restrictions in the Veda, it's there because that weakness is there. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like men have to be more sensitive to others and their feelings. Why? Because men tend to be insensitive. It doesn't tell women to be more sensitive, because they're only sensitive. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that these things are defined like that. So this point of being made, that you can't understand God by analysis, by intelligence, by logic, by all these things, that's because the intellectuals think they can. Just like the Karmi thinks that by his performance of ritual, that's how he'll know God. And so that's what he says, by ritual also it won't happen. But at this point, we're just talking about this. You know, other points, the other will be made. Does that make sense? So the point is even if you find a thing, it won't be the word that they expect, that they know. Does that make sense? So they won't understand. Like as in the Bhagavatam, you have the different, when Krishna comes to back to the rasa dance and the different gopis come out, it doesn't mention anyone's names, but the acharya can tell you who's who. Just by the mood and what they're doing and all that, they'll say this one's this gopi, that one's that gopi. Now, if you say that's this gopi, and that doesn't say it, there's no word there that says that gopi. Like, you know, it's instead of it, you know, this is Vishakha. No, it doesn't say Vishakha here, right? It says Anuradha. No, that's not Vishakha. Why? Because they have no idea. It says the prayers to Jamuna, you can offer those same prayers to Vishaka. And prayers to Vishaka, you can offer to the Jamuna. Why? Because the Jamuna is an expansion of Vishaka. But they don't know these things. So that's the problem. Scholars won't know this, and those who are sentimental don't know the scholarly stuff. So that's why you see our Goswamis are unique in that they know both. Does that make sense? So, in this case, just talk to those who you talk to, the devotees, and just make sure that they understand. If you know it's it's a topic that's kind of alive in the audience, and that, then when you're doing your class, you throw it in as examples. You don't necessarily have to directly talk about it. You just throw it in as an example, and then it'll start to catch. And a person like this, it doesn't matter what you write, they can't be convinced because they don't want to be convinced. Their identity is, I'm the one against this. So it doesn't matter what you present, they'll not accept it, because if you're not devotional, you can't see it. So even amongst scholars, those who are open to Krishna consciousness, they appreciate the movement. And others who are not, they'll never appreciate. So if they put themselves in that position, then that's just the way it goes. So I wouldn't worry about having to defeat them, because you can't. You know, just like it says, you can't wake up a sleeping person who is pretending to be asleep. So don't even try. Yes.
So Rupa Goswami, he mentions that people can argue logic, but they can't argue taste.
Yes.
If we have taste. And also Brahma Samhita, I was thinking on that point, is that Brahma, in Bhagavatam and other scriptures, he speaks a certain way.
Yes.
And it actually matches what, you know, the Govinda Adipurusha.
Yeah, yeah, the same meter.
It matches the way he speaks.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's,
yeah, so that's also evidence. Yeah, that's an evidence. You understood that? It means that in the Govinda and the prayers there, they're in that 14 syllable. And in the Bhagavatam, you see, whenever Brahma speaks, he speaks in that 14 syllable. So it's just the way he talks. Because there's of the Sanskrit grammar, one of the grammars is Brahma. So it'll match. So that's a good point. Good? Yes?
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also tells, there are three kinds of people who are not happy: the ignorant, the faithless, and the doubtful. And among
ignorant, faithless, and doubtful.
And among the three people, the doubtful are the most
most unhappy.
Unhappy.
Krishna, I doubt that's true.
No, that was good.
So, doubtful are those people, they read the scriptures and everything. They feel that, but with me it doesn't work.
Yes, it doesn't apply.
And faithless are those people, they read too many scriptures, and when they come up with contrary things, they can't understand.
Yeah.
So then they give up faith.
Okay.
And ignorant are better people, because they are ignorant.
Yeah, it's like, who doesn't like pets, right? You know. Nice Buddha. Nice Buddha. Good Buddha. Yeah, because the point is by association, their ignorance can be cleared. The faithless, by pointing out the actual thing, then they can develop that faith. But the problem with the person who's doubtful, who doubts everything, then it's just about themselves, so then you can't do much. You know. But by association of devotees, by taking Vishad, following the process, they get purified, then eventually those doubts start to go. So you see, so many, what were we talking about in the beginning of the class, the doubts in the way of philosophy basically have gone. They've accepted that in the position of the Supreme Absolute Truth. But their doubts in the religion of Krishna consciousness, then in certain areas that remains. So it's just a matter of time and association. Yes?
It's just a detail to Madhavi's inquiry about being unconscious when you die. This example with Shanti Devi.
Shanti.
Shanti Devi. This is one Indian lady who can remember her past life. So she said when she died, she was in the body, all the family members was there. She was aware of all the family members, but they thought she was dead. She didn't have access to the body. I mean, she couldn't.
That's the point. Is that it's in the level of consciousness that it's there. It doesn't have to manifest through the senses.
So she couldn't access the body any longer, but she was still there.
Okay. And that note will end. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Vrinda. Okay, so tomorrow won't be class, and then on Monday we'll have class.